I think we're going to get started if everyone is situated and comfortable. First of all, good morning and thanks for joining the session this morning. For those of you I haven't met, my name is Vinita Bhatia and I'm the Director of Business Development at TCS World Travel. And I'm here today to introduce our speaker. We're going to talk about technology today and how we can really leverage the latest technology to help attract customers and engage customers. And obviously, technology is something that's very dynamic. It's always changing. We feel like we're constantly hearing about it, learning about it, and trying to keep up with it. And so it can be overwhelming. So I think today's session is going to be really informative, and hopefully you guys find it interesting as well. I had the pleasure of introducing Mark Bluestein. He is a research analyst for Focusrite. And for those of you who aren't familiar, Focusrite is a go-to resource for travel industry research. Mark's specific area of expertise is consumer research, and he's responsible for survey development and analysis. He's been with Focusrite since 2014 and has done studies all over the world in many markets. And he also heads the company's annual travel technology survey. Mark graduated with a master's degree in applied science from the City University of New York, where his research focused on consumer behavior and the effect of social class and identities on the consumer decision process. I had to write that down because there was no way I was going to remember all that. So today he's going to share his thoughts on how things like smartphones, in-home technology, virtual reality are affecting trip research and the decision-making process. He'll also share some case studies of companies that have leveraged technology effectively and used it well in a way to attract customers, retain customers, and also engage prospects. So with that, I'm going to turn it over to Mark, and we'll take some questions at the end. All right?
Thank you, everyone, for showing up to the talk over here. So the purpose of this talk really is to kind of figure out how travel will be in 2025. So 2025, that's 7 years from now. And some may feel that that's going to be tomorrow. 7 years is nothing. That's only tomorrow. Or some may feel like that's a light year away. We got so much time. We can plan however we want. So thinking of both those ways of thinking, I kind of organized this talk as a very like retrospective of kind of how the industry is changing now, how consumers are using technology, how has that changed in the past years that we've collected data, and how that could change in the future. Because what they're doing now has implications for what they will do in the future. So to start, I kind of want to go with just some top line statistics of what the US leisure travel market looks like. So currently, according to our studies, we saw that 145 million US adults took a leisure trip. And by leisure trip, we mean either booking an airline ticket or going away from their home 75 miles away and staying in some sort of paid accommodation, anything that was paid for. So that's how we define a leisure trip. So that's 2016. That's about 66% of the US adult population. 7 years ago on that chart was 2009. 2009 was the height of the recession, completely different social status in the country. So economy was down, people had different responsibilities. They were more likely to go back to school, figure out what they were doing, jobs were scarce and hard to get. So traveling suffered. So this is kind of the mindset we need to understand when we try to predict the future. There are other factors, especially in the travel industry, that will decide if someone's going to take a trip. It's what are they doing with their family? What are they doing with their house? How is their job? Are they in school or are they not? So these things we need to understand as well as the technology. So now some more about the travel population in the US. So the highest percentage of travelers are 18 to 34. Now this isn't that surprising because they are actually becoming the largest population within the entire US. But something interesting about this group, 18 to 34 year olds love travel. They, on all of our surveys, indicate a higher love for travel than any other consumer expenditure, whether it be electronics, fixing their home, probably because they don't own a home yet, or any other thing that you might think of buying. And then actually, when we look at kind of the youngest age group, those 18 to 24-year-olds, those who are still in school, they're still in college, they, in 2016, were the most likely out of all age groups to take at least one leisure trip. So they're the most likely age group out of all to want to travel. So that's the group you want to target, basically. They're young, they might not have a lot of money yet, but at least you can kind of feed them into a way of traveling and foster that love for it. Now, there's still more to this pie. There are the boomers, and then there's Generation X. So during this talk, I will not focus too much on the millennials, because when we talk about the future, we need to understand all the age groups and how tech and how different changes can affect everyone. So kind of more statistics just on general travel trends. The average leisure traveler takes almost 3 trips a year. This is not including business or kind of a business extension. So if I stayed over the weekend, this would not be within the statistics. This is a pure leisure trip that they thought about taking and planning as a vacation, whether by themselves or with their friends or family. And for those trips, the average spend on travel components, so this is cruises, airlines, flights, hotels, not actually in destination spend on going to the store and buying some clothes or the duty free, is a little around $3,000. So now, kind of the idea of online travel, booking travel online, this is something that's been around for 20 years. The company I work for, Focusrite, was founded because of this, kind of tracking the changes of how travel went from offline to online and how this affected the market. Now, the thing is with that story is online is everywhere. In every market that we surveyed, a consumer is either shopping, researching, or booking something related to travel. In every market, it's close to 100%, in the US, over 90. And so we're mostly gonna focus on the US. So when I speak about trends and future trends and what's gonna happen, we need to understand that they're already doing things online, and all the kind of new innovations are just building on top of it. So it's not gonna go away. The internet's still gonna be around. That's not gonna change in 7 years. But mobile, which will be the first topic we're gonna go into, is just something that's built on top of it. It's taking the internet on the go. Digital. The idea that digital and the internet can disrupt any type of industry, and the ones I'm gonna kind of use as a case study are private accommodations and tours and activities, things that many in the travel industry never thought online can affect, and they have. The other thing we're gonna go into is the idea of pictures and videos and how those on the internet are changing the research and the human experience of travel. And then we're gonna kind of talk about AI and how everyone's kind of saying that robots will take our jobs and ruin the future. Well, that's probably not gonna happen. It's more that we're gonna have these digital assistants that are really helping us and making travel planning a little easier. And then finally, I'm gonna kind of finish this off and talk about the consumers and kind of how millennials are really important. Well, actually, I'm really just gonna focus on boomers in the end, because they are a group that are really interesting in travel specifically right now. So that's how we're gonna end. So starting with mobile, the idea that mobile is reshaping everything. You can see this when you walk out. When someone walks the street, they're looking at their phone. When someone is talking to another human, they're looking at their phone. People are ordering food looking at their phones. So it's changing everything. And when the smartphone was invented, it was invented to make phone calls. But it is more than just a phone device. It is a computer in your pocket. You can do what you want with it, when you want with it. And travelers use it to shop and book. 61% of travelers in the last year, that's 2017, use their smartphone to either shop for or book something related to travel. That means they are doing it whenever they want and they can look at it. So now kind of looking at these smartphone booking numbers, just booking a little deeper, the percentage of those who booked a flight or a hotel stay and how many of them booked online. So I'm gonna start in the past, 2013. That's the first time we kind of gathered this data. Within 1 year, that jump was 10 percentage points. Within 1 year, the mobile device grew so quickly. Since then, it's kind of teetered, and now we're at 33% of hotel stays booked on a mobile versus 27% of flights. And I will note, there's that little dip in 2016. We had to write many articles on it. There was many phone calls by the magazines and the trade publications. How can mobile dip? It's supposed to keep growing. It's a new technology. The interesting thing about 2016 was there was a lot of economic issues, so it caused travelers to travel a little less, so maybe less chance to book on a mobile phone. We really couldn't check too much of that in our data, but in our data what we found was older travelers became more likely to own a smartphone. Those travelers in the 55 to 64 age group, 65 plus, saw really significant increases in smartphone ownership. Thing was, they're now part of the pool in this that we calculate, but they weren't ready to book just yet. So that's why we saw in kind of like the statistical testing that we would say is probably more likely causing that little dip that we had. So outside of booking and kind of using our smartphones. Smartphones change our general behaviors all the time. This smartphone has made us a little impatient, if I would say. Just looking at my family, if the internet isn't working for 5 minutes when my mother's trying to bank, she gets very upset. When my little niece or cousin and the smartphone doesn't open up Instagram in 5 seconds, she has a fit. Because these devices and being connected at all times has made us expect things at a moment's notice when we want it. Now that's something very hard to measure within the travel industry. So the way we try to make that distinction is booking timelines, especially for hotels. So if you look at the chart, it's split down the middle with a line. On the left side, it's 2 weeks or less. And we see those darker blue bars. Those are anyone who booked a hotel on a smartphone. They're more likely to book within less than 3 weeks of time. Then we go on the other side, that's overall, any type of booking, offline, online, in person, walking into a hotel. They're more likely to take 3 weeks or longer. The thing is, the 1 day or less, that 10% who are booking the day of, or maybe the day before, that's something that's really interesting. We didn't have the chance to measure a couple years back, because not only that's a blend of the smartphone, but it's also a blend of the travel industry coming to let consumers do that. Because travelers have been booking hotels the day of for as long as hotels were existing. You go on a road trip, you find a hotel because you need to stop, you stay for the night, and you book it. And then there was a company, Hotel Tonight, that looked at the smartphone and said, well, we can put this online too and put it in a convenient app and let someone roaming the streets open up their phone and now compare different hotels for that night and click a button. And within an hour, they just show up to their hotel and check in. And after they introduced their app, we saw kind of that 1 day or less rise up to kind of like where it is at 10%. Before that, it wasn't really worth us tracking. And now there's another industry that's kind of taking advantage of mobile and that just push to access, let travelers do something on demand. Those are those ride-hailing apps you have on your smartphone, whether it be Lyft or Uber. Now, some may say taxis and car service aren't part of the travel industry. We don't have to deal with them. But the people who are booking travel, they are using them, and they're using them in cities, and those things are changing the way a city operates. Because now a traveler doesn't have to go down, ask the concierge, can I get a cab number? I'm trying to go somewhere. They can open up their phone, which is using the Google Maps or a different type of map system and geolocating them, and they can order a car without making a phone call, just pushing a button, and it'll tell them where they need to go. Now, this is more kind of word of mouth data. I don't have any statistical data. This is more from observations and speaking to people. But since these services came into use, cities changed. Travelers, when they go to a city, they're leaving those tourist hotspots. When you go to cities, it's very much like tourist hubs. This is where the tourists stay, and these are where the locals go. Well, now because of these apps, tourists will go where the locals go because there's less anxiety. They don't need to say, I need to get a rental car, or there's no public transportation where I'm going. How do I get back? Do I need to ask the restaurant for a phone number? That anxiety is lifted from them because they can easily say, well, I have my Uber or my Lyft app. A car will come to me and it'll take me back to my hotel. And just for future, these companies are also investing in things that use AI. They're trying to invest in autonomous vehicles so that in the future, when someone presses this button, it won't be a human driver. It'll actually be an autonomous vehicle, which then could even change how cities are in the future. Because right now, cities are very car-oriented. There's parking lots, there's streets. But now, if there's autonomous vehicles, that will change, and that could breathe more space to either natural activities, nature, more parks. And that was a white paper, actually, that talked about this that was written by one of the CEOs of Lyft. But a little data on kind of why I believe that word of mouth data on why I believe travelers are actually expanding more into cities is when we look at this chart and we ask travelers, how are you using these mobile ride sharing services? Are you even using them? Or if you are using them at home or when you're traveling? We see more travelers use them while they're traveling. Because when they're home, they probably have their car or they know how to get to where they're going or they know the public transport system. But when they're traveling, 41% of them are using. And when we combine traveling at home, 51% of travelers are using a ride share service. So when a traveler is booking a vacation, whether a package or something, when they get to that destination, they want to explore and see part of that and really understand it, they're going to use these services if they're available. And even older travelers, some may say, well, older travelers won't use a ride sharing service. In 2017, over a quarter of travelers, 55 plus, used one of these services, either at home or traveling. The year prior, 12%. So it almost doubled in 1 year. So they are using their smartphones and they're using them for these services. Maybe not as fast as millennials because millennials are driving it, but they are trying to adapt and use these. And these services are really going off that peer-to-peer platform and kind of giving travelers an option to have another human help them out. Another industry that operates that way are both the private accommodation and tours and activities. So I'm going to start with private accommodation. So the thing with private accommodation was, as an industry, it was very much an offline industry. There were managers and property rentals that had number of apartments very often, or homes very often, in sunshine or ski destinations, where a traveler with their family would call up and ask them, what week block do you have available for the season? And then they would book that way. And then the manager would look through an Excel sheet, check all their emails, check their pen and paper, and then find out what's available. Well, in the early 2000s, companies started putting this up online, whether it be HomeAway, VRBO, FlipKey, even Airbnb. They started putting this online, and this increased just the ease of researching these destinations and these type of offerings for accommodations. So we saw in 2012, in the last survey, 13% of travelers stayed in a rental accommodation. Fast forward to 2016, 26% started staying in rental accommodations. And it's been about a quarter the past 2 years since kind of these kind of came out in 2014, and has been up and down. But that's not the technological innovation that happened. Just putting it online isn't an innovation, because that's what we're used to. The internet's been around for over 20 years. But kind of letting them book it online, because even those early websites, it was allowed to book, but it wasn't always a complete booking. There was still some back and forth over there. There was still, I need to email and check availability, and then we got to take the payment off the platform. So kind of the idea I want to give from this is that the key here for this industry and what helped it grow and become really top of mind in consumers is digital. That it was easy, because a lot of especially younger people feel things that are online make it easier. I don't need to make phone calls. I don't need to do too much research. I can look what's online and take the information I need. And really the website we kind of attribute to a lot of this work was Airbnb. They kind of flipped the industry, I would say, a little bit. If you look at the photo I have up there, it's a picture of their app. What they did was they put a book button, but it was more than just the book button. It allowed you to pay. They took the payment off a second platform and they left it on theirs, so that when you buy a rental accommodation, it's the same as booking your hotel, it's the same as booking a tour, it's the same as booking your flight or just shopping. You don't have to go from one website, make an agreement, and then go somewhere else and make the payment. It was one place. And that transformed not only the consumer behavior, but it changed the industry itself. Half of bookings in 2016 of rental stays became within 1 month of departure. In 2012, that was less than 20%. And in that 2012 survey, the 1 month time frame was as low as we went. We didn't go lower. For this last one, we had to go lower because we know travelers could book these earlier. And it actually looks just like the chart earlier of hotel bookings, the overall, not the smartphone. It's not there yet. It looks like the overall. The next change Airbnb helped introduce to this market is now travelers can stay in a rental accommodation for 3 nights or less. They don't need to sign on for a week-long block. They don't have to go there. And now even they can go to an urban environment. They could rent an apartment in a city. Airbnb opened up the supply of rentals. In fact, it actually opened up the accommodation availability in cities, which now changed the consumer behavior, because now consumers don't say, I need a hotel for a trip. I need a rental accommodation for a trip. They say, I want to go to this destination. I want to go there because the beach is beautiful and I really like these restaurants near that beach. Let me find something near those, because those are the bigger drivers currently for consumers. It's not, well, I want to stay at the nicest hotel and then I'll figure out what to do there. No, they're figuring out what they want to do first and accommodation second. So that's really helped that now that there's more supply. They're not clunked into these tourist hotspots that they may not want to be in. They kind of want to maybe live with the local. And that's really the Airbnb kind of theme that they try to portray. And now they're entering the world of trips, trips being tours and activities. And this introduced in 2016, and it's been growing for them. Now, I'm not going to really harp on them as much. It's more or less just talk about the industry as a whole and how this industry will become the new industry that becomes digitized. We did a survey of activity, tour operators, kind of live event operators, over about 1,600 of them we surveyed, and then we did also interviews to get a little more data and background on those surveys. And we found that 80% of their gross bookings, the money they make from bookings, are offline. We already showed, or I already showed that over 90% of U.S. consumers are doing stuff online. So they're trying to find information online. Why can't they book a tour online? Well, they can book a tour online. The thing is, they can't book it early on yet. If you want to do a tour today, you have to make a phone call or have someone help you. You have to book a tour for today a couple days back. And that's what we got from the information, kind of from the interviews. The tour operators said, we can't process one day or maybe 1 or 2 days before tours online. There's no connection because most of the online tour sellers aren't the actual operators. They're bigger companies that are just trying to sell tickets. And the thing is, as an industry, this is what travelers want. This is what they're doing. They're going to destinations to explore. They're going to hike. They're going to take tours. They're trying to visit museums. And these are some of the strongest motivators kind of wanting to experience for those longer trips, for those higher spend trips. And we kind of see when we look at those timelines of when are travelers booking their tours, it really relates to what we got from the tour operators. Across all age groups, the darkest bar on the right is the day of the activity. So if someone, whether it be someone 55 plus, 35, 54, 18 to 34, are booking a tour the day of where they're most likely going to, that means they're walking into a shop that they saw or they're asking the concierge to make a phone call. But thinking of technology and where's the opportunity and why so many companies want to put this online, here I have to look at the millennials, those 18 to 34 year olds. If we look at those first three bars to the left, that 10% with the really light white, the 17 and 25, those are bookings for activities either before they booked flights or hotels. That activity or that wanting to experience something was more prominent for that traveler than anything else on their trip. Where they were even staying was an afterthought to what they were doing. They're booking at the same time as flights and hotels, or they're booking it right after. Those are the online bookings. And as I said, currently, if they wanted to do that day off, they couldn't, but they want to research. That's something that's very interesting about this group. They're booking a lot of their accommodations and flights very close to arrival, but they research so much longer than any other age group. Most travelers, the average kind of trip timeline when they made a decision is about 3 months out from the trip. When we look at kind of just 18 to 34 year olds, they're making decisions closer, but they extend their research period to 2-3 months, whereas an older traveler, they might research for 2 or 3 days. The reason being is they say, they kind of know this already, going to the same place, or I have experience here. Whereas someone, especially someone who's younger, 18 to 24, this could be their first big trip that they're researching or kind of the first time they're taking a vacation without their parents, that they're doing their own booking. So they take their time, they're going online, they're researching these things, especially on what to do, because that's kind of what they want to share with their friends and show that they took a trip. Travel has become such a cultural capital in our societies with the rise of social and wanting to share their experiences with others. It's kind of how food took off so quickly. And the industry has responded. As a sector, money has been raised for a number of different companies, whether it be kind of consumer platforms to let them book online or it be back-end reservation systems for the actual operator. And just to talk about one company that I know from who presented at our conference last year, it's by the name of Redeem. They won pretty much every kind of award they qualified for. And what they were trying to do was connect the resellers online with the actual operator, kind of give them that information quick and fast so that a traveler can book on a mobile device the day of and without printing anything show up to that activity. So that's something they're trying to do and build out. And the reason being is researching tours and activities is very easy. You can do it online, you can do it, you can call someone, you can speak to the concierge here. It's very easy and it's very bookable online, but sometimes there's a frustration if someone wants to do something the day of and they didn't have time to do that and they're finding that they can't do it online because now they have to look for numbers and see who has availability because it's not easily accessible online. And now talking about tours, and I mentioned earlier that it's kind of the experience and it lets travelers share their cultural capital with their pictures that they took of those tours. Or the reason kind of travelers are leaving the tourist hub is and going further is they're seeing things on social from their friends and cities and they want to capture those photos and share it out to the world. And the thing is, visuals are very strong for humans. We use them as influencers for many decisions. When we talk about travel decisions, 25% of online travelers used an online video before they made a travel decision. It influenced something they did. They were looking for something and then they found out what they wanted. 31% of online travelers were influenced by visuals posted by friends or family. So they're going on YouTube, they're going through their social networks, and they're looking at pictures. And why they're looking at pictures is because pictures are beautiful. They really kind of entice you to want to do something, especially with travel. You can go on Pinterest, you can go on Instagram, and you can see these beautiful places, and you want to go there. It makes you feel like you want to be there. Just think about that Pinterest picture, that beach with the little pink flamingo. It can really cause a priming effect in a consumer. Back in the old days, advertisers tried to create jingles. Well, we don't need jingles, because if you put a good photo on social media, that will stick with a person. Because humans learn from images. We can learn from kinetics, we can learn from movement, or we can learn from hearing, but that's very hard to kind of give unless you're really putting the video. And visuals are very strong. They're lasting in our minds, so that when someone goes to book and want to book a beach vacation, they will remember that photo and try and maybe book a hotel closer to the beach because they remembered how beautiful that looked in that photo. And we get this from our data as well. When we ask travelers, like, what do you recall the most from online travel ads? 49% recalled a visual or a picture. That's more than the percentage who recalled the price. So when people are trying to be influenced, the price isn't the motivator yet. Price is the motivator when the credit card comes out. But most of the time, if you influence them correctly, and they're so enticed and they really want what they see, sometimes that will back end and the price really won't matter as much, and they will take the beautiful destination over it because they saw everything. And we kind of see how the strength of sharing videos has come as well in travel. Those experiences are growing because social grew. Kind of sharing it with your friends and showing those photos. Now you don't have to kind of like invite your friends and show them the pictures. You just put on your Instagram at the time, and we see 20% of travelers are now posting photos of their travel experience while they're kind of like doing the in-destination travel. And a lot of people say social media is only a platform for younger travelers. Well, our data shows differently. We're seeing that older travelers also feel that social networks are important for how they connect with their friends and family and their networks. We see it is growing for all of them. And this is the thing we need to understand. Social networks are a place for people to connect. And older travelers want to connect with friends or family that they might have not seen years ago, colleagues from work that they changed, or from college buddies. And interesting studies by Facebook is actually older users stay longer. They're on the network at longer intervals, while younger travelers kind of like take it in doses, a couple seconds scrolling, and then they leave because they're using it on their smartphone. Well, there's older travelers more likely to do it on the PC and things like that, and kind of like absorb what's on there. So that they're actually accessible through these networks and kind of engaging with them and creating those relationships. And now taking visual a little bit further, the idea of virtual reality and augmented reality. So we don't have much data on kind of the usage of either of these. They're fairly new. But we do have data on if anyone has experienced 360-degree photos. Kind of if you pan an area and then you put it on Facebook, someone could look at all the angles. Well, a little over 40% of travelers use those. Just they're looking at them, they're influencing by it. About 17% of them are using them for travel, kind of look about travel destinations. And that's really useful because those photos, if you put them in something as simple as a Google Cardboard or one of those headsets they'll give you now for free when you get a smartphone, and you look around, all those angles become lifelike. And you could really feel like you're in the destination, just tickling more senses than just a static photo. And that's kind of what the idea of why companies are investing in virtual reality. They're trying to take it even further than that, where it's more of a virtual experience. There's a lot of hotel chains that are trying to invest in it, as well as DMO groups of destinations. They're trying to let travelers understand what they have to offer. And then the idea of augmented reality, taking kind of the virtual world and making it feel real in front of you. The best example I have is Pokemon Go. It created a giant kind of treasure hunt within cities. Beyond the treasure hunt, it created a new economy for cities. Travelers or people, they got together with, whether they were using meetup groups or just going with friends and family, going around the city, experiencing parks, anywhere where Pokemon were, or companies such as hotels, restaurants, or kind of like destinations or points were able to put lures to get people in at the promise that you can catch Pokemon here, and hopefully now you're in my restaurant, you walk away with maybe a coffee or a croissant or something. So it really changed the way kind of companies can interact with someone, because now they're at least in your building, they're your customer now. Whether they're there for Pokemon or not, is you can still give them a good experience, and that's what a lot of in the service industry try to do. And another place where I feel the future of augmented reality could be in kind of upgrading kind of like some in-destination activities or giving some background or some information. Now, a company I was able to see a demonstration from, I don't know too much about their kind of like background or their finances, but Time Looper, they did a demonstration at one of our conference. They're a virtual reality experience where they use their own actors. They set this up where if you go to the actual destinations, the example I'll use, the one they showed us, was Times Square. You're in Times Square, you're looking around, you see lights, you see a bunch of people, massive people, more tourists, the Olive Garden, and things like that. Now you put on, with your phone, you access their system, you go into a virtual experience of the D-Day kiss. It feels like you're there. They have the confetti coming down. They have the kiss happening, and they have everyone wearing the clothes of the time. So not only are you getting the experience of what is now, you're getting the experience of what was. And this is kind of how I see the future of what augmented and virtual reality could be. It could be while you're in a museum, instead of being, if they don't have actual human tour guides, they often give you those clunky earpieces, and then you're walking, and you go to a photo, and it tells you, look at her feet. Well, which foot, left or right? Which, then it says, look at her hands. Well, now which I got to figure out left or right. Well, augmented reality could change that. It could, you could put your phone to the photo, to the painting you're looking at, and now a virtual actual tour guide could tell you where to look and give you the history and make you more interactive with the museum tour instead of just hearing someone tell it to you. And that's kind of like where the future is going to go. And that will eventually be powered more by AI. And when we think of AI, we're really talking about, at least far as in the travel space, it's talking about chatbots, those automated responses that you can get from either a travel provider or any type of company, or those voice digital assistants. But make no mistake, AI has been around for a while. It is pretty much in a lot of different things we don't know about. If you use a mobile banking and you take a photo of your check to deposit it, that is powered by AI. An AI machine is able to recognize that photo. Your Facebook, your Instagram are powered by AI. That they know who your friends are before you tagged you, those are their AI algorithms at work. And kind of with travel, and the reason travel companies even want to get into messaging systems and try and help travels with messaging is one, that's where travelers already are. 73% of online travelers are using messaging while they're traveling. So they're using messaging apps like WhatsApp, Facebook Messenger. They're doing direct message through their Instagram or their Facebook. So they're already using it. So it's a good place for them to connect. Another thing is, especially for the younger age groups, they hate calling people and they hate waiting on hold. So this seems like a better place to delete that friction. You write your post, it'll let you know when they come back to you. And kind of the travel use cases we looked into and felt that this might be able to help. Chat could work with this. It could work with the kind of like the whole planning and shopping phase. It could look with help in destination with it, whether it be recommendations or kind of like maybe chatting with a concierge or something like that, or just customer service touch points. I'm in my hotel room, I need some toothpaste brought up, and I can just talk to someone downstairs without walking down, and it'll come up. So when we surveyed consumers and saw what they were more comfortable using, it really were those kind of like simple question tasks. So the first kind of like two groups we have are customer service and human touch points. Those are, like I said, contacting hotel front desk, asking maybe what time is breakfast, what time do I need to check out. Those simple, where it's not a very deep conversation. Same thing with the human touch points. You want to know where's the best place to eat. Let me message either the front desk if they're there, or the concierge better if it hasn't closed. But we also saw that travelers were willing to do some of their planning, shopping, and booking. Over 50% were willing to either book something or kind of like at least shop through a chat to get some ideas and offerings. The one option that was under 50% was when we actually put in there, well, what happens if you're chatting with a computer-powered assistant, that the responses are no longer coming from a human? Well, that's below 50 at 43%. So that's still a good amount of travelers who have some confidence that they'd be willing to do this. One thing I will say, in the future, that should grow. Because as these companies keep investing, whether it be Google, Amazon, Facebook, they're investing in the natural language that these computers will be able to speak and sound more human, so that we won't really understand really maybe good or bad if it is or is not a human responding to us. And then the idea of voice. So currently, 40% of online travelers actively use a voice assistant. And by actively, we mean at least once a week. And by voice assistant, we mean either the Siri on your iPhone, the Google Home you have at your house, Amazon, any kind of voice assistant, home or at home. But the thing is, what they're using them for are very basic tasks. What's the weather? Can you please play some music? They're not really doing any research or trying to find something out to help them maybe plan a trip. And we get that as well when we ask them what they're comfortable with these devices as far as trip planning. We see it's still those kind of simple requests. We see the top three are getting general information. Just tell me what the weather is like today. I need to know if I want to go to the beach. They'll find out the weather. It's 5 o'clock. I'm somewhere I've never been. Where should I go eat? And what's a good tour to take? Those are those kind of like simple tasks. Nothing like, I need to pick a hotel. I need something under $200. Give me some options. Those travelers aren't as comfortable with using by voice. Kind of the first thing we see that was actually a transaction where money might take place by voice was ordering an Uber, those ride-hailing apps. 43% of travelers saying, yeah, I'd be comfortable just telling my phone or my Amazon at home to do that. And the reason I feel this is kind of probably the highest thing is because those kind of services were introduced with the mobile device. It's not too different opening that app and pressing a button and then asking your phone to open it up for you. Also, that's not a high ticket item. Most of the time a cab is $20, $30, so there's not so much consumer fatigue over price consideration. So they're willing to make that choice and just say, yeah, just order me for that. I don't need to touch my phone. So that's kind of like the future of voice we see. We see that even some of that could even grow as it gets stronger. But for AI to grow and for voice to grow, personalization needs to grow. Because if my Amazon Echo at home is giving me responses that I don't feel work with me or don't go with my personality, I'm not going to use it and ask it questions anymore. Personalization is really important in the travel space. Travelers who like shopping versus not so much on, they want to be in hotels that are close to those areas. And a lot of times travel companies will inundate them with emails or flash ads or sales that don't represent what the traveler wants. Travel companies do have some data. They have your past destinations sometimes. They have kind of like your age, your demographics. And travelers feel you should be using this to kind of help them in their decision making. We even ask travelers, what kind of data are you willing to give to a travel company or someone helping you plan travel to make a better decision? Over 50% of them said, sure, I'll let you know the past travel brands I booked with, if I have any food allergies, things I like, or kind of like entertainment, things I do, and other data points like that. They're willing to give it to you so that if you can kind of make an offering that really touches some of those things that really they feel is about them, they'll like that. 55% of travelers agree. Proactive recommendations are helpful. They want recommendations from anyone trying to sell them something, especially travel. This is a high ticket item. They want to make the best decision they can and they want to enjoy their trip. And then not only do they want proactive recommendations, but they don't want a long list. 51% of travelers feel they'd rather see few travel options which reflect their habits and kind of what they like. This I would like to equate to kind of like that Amazon or Netflix. When you go on Amazon or Netflix, there's always some type of recommendation based on your past behaviors. So they're used to this in their daily online shopping lives, and they're at a point where why can't travel react the same? We openly ask kind of travelers what's their biggest frustration. Fill in a box, write it. One of the biggest frustration was they feel there's too much information out there. They're inundated with prices and options. A lot of them, they just have to sift through and ignore. So if that now a travel company comes to them and says, I know who you are. I have your data. I can really tailor things to your interests. Are you interested? We actually just did a study with Google recently who asked that question. Would you pay actually extra for such a service? Travelers said yes. There was a good number, percentage of travelers who felt, yes, I would pay a little extra if I knew that this travel company would recommend and only show me things they know I like, and that if I don't like it, they'll kind of redo their kind of like algorithm and help me out and help my planning. And that's kind of like AI at work from their side. But that's something also humans can do if you really have a good customer service team and touch your clients very well. So kind of like bringing this back to AI and just kind of like the investments, because AI is not going to work if we just dream it. Companies need to do something. So when during the survey, we asked a lot of companies where they're investing in terms of AI. And as far as kind of like the current heavy investment, a lot of it's in customer support via messaging, a little less in chatbots. And we see there's small investments in AI voice search. That's the middle kind of blue bar. And then the top blue bar was just really just planning. That's the virtual reality and augmented reality. The problem with this chart and with the idea of AI is all of this is pretty much artificial intelligence. Calling something AI is very broad. AI is powering your chatbot. It's an algorithm within it that understands kind of human speech and human responses, and it's giving you the best one it feels to respond to that based on its teaching and learning. Same thing with the voice search. And kind of in a way, same thing with the virtual reality and the augmented reality. These things are powered by a computer that has been learning and knowing what is wrong versus what's right, just like a human does, just like a child. it needs to be taught, it needs to be fed this information. So that's kind of what the companies are doing. So when I make this statement that AI will revolutionize travel planning, we just don't know how and when yet. It's already revolutionizing things now. But we're talking about in the future. How much will it grow? Will there be that augmented reality kind of tour guide in museums when I go there? Or will I be able to kind of book a simple flight through my Amazon Echo at home or the Google Assistant on my phone? I can do that now. I can ask it. It's a little clunky, but it will do it for me. In the future, it won't be clunky. That kind of friction will go away. And there will be, most likely, will be those younger millennials currently who will be the ones kind of trying these out and experiencing with it. And if they learn it well, they will try and teach their parents, and then they will try it a couple years later on. So that kind of brings me into the millennials. So I'll just touch on them fairly quickly. A lot of these tech trends that I went over, like that mobile grew so quickly, or the adoption of in-home devices and voice, they're the ones who powered it. Millennials were the tech adopters. Another thing about millennials, they love to travel. They love to travel. Their motivations are very cultural. They want to experience a place. That's what's very high for them, especially when they go international, when they go on long trips. But not to say that boomers don't like to travel. So boomers are interesting, especially to me. I find them interesting because while they're older and maybe not as tech savvy as the younger group, but there's reasons for that. They were working when the online boom happened and a lot of this tech came through. Not very easy to go home and try and learn something new, especially online or a new technology when you have a job. You might have kids in college or you have responsibilities within your house. So they weren't able to maybe learn tech 7 years ago. But they are, as I showed, they were learning it now. They're going on social and they're using them because maybe the kids are gone. They're retired. They don't have to worry about those things of, well, I got work tomorrow. Do I really want to sit and try and figure this kind of Google Home in my house out, hook up my Kindle Fire or the Amazon Fire Stick to my TV? But now the kids are gone. Maybe they'll have them over and teach them, and they have more time. Not only do they have more time, when we think of like consumer purchases, they pretty much bought a lot of the consumer purchases they feel they need. Plus, they already own, they're most likely to own, the biggest consumer purchase we'll ever make in our lives, which is a home. So they already own it, and a lot of them have already paid it off, so they don't have to worry about that. So when they travel, they do take less trips. They're less likely to travel 3 or more times for leisure than the younger age groups. They're traveling 1 to 2. But their trips are longer, 7+ nights they're more likely to take. And they are influenced even more than younger travelers by natural attractions. They want to get outside. They want to see what's in the destination they're going to. But unlike younger travelers, they're also influenced by the appeal of nice hotels and nice lodging. They do want to stay in nice places. This makes them book nicer accommodations than a younger traveler. And what that leads to with a longer trip and nicer accommodation, it includes a higher spend per trip. So when we looked at the last leisure trip a traveler took, around 40% of boomers spent $3,000 or more on their last leisure trip. So the thing is with boomers is when they travel, they're not going to worry about spend. They want to enjoy this trip. They want to get everything out of it. They want to explore what they want to explore. They want to stay where they want to stay. And they want the best trip possible. The millennial, on the other hand, the millennial wants to travel at all costs. They want to take 3 trips. They want to take 4 or 5 if they could. They want to visit Southeast Asia and Morocco and Mexico in the same year. So they will penny pinch each one of them to make that happen. Because they want to travel, because they need to share all those trips to their friends and have those conversations. Whereas the boomer on the other end really just wants to kind of take this trip because this is the trip they want to take and get everything they could out of that trip. And the thing is, they are more technically savvy. So this chart is talking about the mobile travel population. And what I mean by mobile travelers, we asked them if they booked on a smartphone or a tablet or they shopped on either or. If you did that, you are a mobile traveler. So in 2016, only 29% of that population was 45 plus. 1 year later, that population went up to 33%. That means they're taking space away from the younger age groups. That means more of them are doing this, while the younger age groups, well, most of them already do it, so there's no space for them to take. It's older travelers who are gaining more space within this group. And the reason they were able to gain space in this group is because they became more likely to shop or book on their smartphones. So we see that those 55 plus now in 1 year, 40% booked on a smartphone. That one of those early charts I showed you, the smartphone booking in that 2016 dip, that I say was most likely caused by older travelers, because now that they do have smartphones, they're probably not ready. Looking at this data, they got ready pretty quickly. In 1 year, 40% booked. And when we look at the younger age group, there's not much growth there. 78% to 74%, it went down a bit. Next year, it'll probably go back up, because they're already there. It's for them, it's they have no problem booking on mobile. It's, am I with my mobile device at the moment, or am I with my PC? It's for them, it's more convenience of device. And that's also gonna be the change for the older group as well. So there, we shouldn't ignore older travelers and say, well, I can't touch them the same way as someone who's younger. They're using the same tech as someone who's 18 to 24, 35. We live in the same world. We have the same kind of social, economic, and cultural macro things happening to us. It's just we experience them differently based on our age. So we can still be touched in the same places. We just need to understand how we do those conversations need to be changed based on the age group. So kind of in summation, kind of on traveling in 2025, and kind of like how I feel things will change. So the internet will still be around and mobile will still be around. Mobile will be far stronger. It'll let you do more. Your digital assistant in your pocket will sound better, work better, so that I will be able to make all my bookings online on my mobile device, and then my digital assistant will know all of them and make a nice itinerary and ask me, do I want to share it to my girlfriend and my parents? I will say yes, it'll send it to them. My girlfriend will see it, she'll know when I'm coming home, as will my mother, and she will know how to operate the smartphone to do that by then and get that information. Then there will be more augmented and virtual experiences. These experiences will be part not only of how we play games or things like that, but they will be a part of how we see a place. There's no reason we can't integrate that with museums. What kind of like anytime we walk around in a city, if you see a point of interest that a city can install, something like that, these can be integrated in that. And then there will be more travelers. Older travelers will be more experienced with the tech that's around and they'll be using it. So that's kind of where I feel 2025 will bring travel. It will be a more connected space with the technology and how we're doing it. So thank you everyone for the talk, and I hope there was some good takeaways. Any questions?
All of this was built on a free internet and all developed, and now we're going into this net neutrality. How do you think that's going to impact all of this?
So there's a lot saying on net neutrality. So net neutrality wasn't really around much when a lot of this, the online boom started. It happened with the Obama administration that it really went in. So we really don't know what the companies are gonna do. Reading articles, I think a lot of it's gonna affect not so much the consumer, but more the big brands, where now AT&T or in New York, it's Cablevision, the big internet provider, they're gonna go to Google and say, well, you gotta pay us more now. And instead of them coming to the consumer asking for more, I think they're gonna put it more on the company, and the companies have more money than consumers generally. So that's where I think they're gonna put it to, and if it goes that way, it shouldn't affect us too much, unless now the companies decide to put fees on, higher fees. That's the only thing they would probably do, which would change something. And I don't think social really could survive with fees.
Okay.
We have one right here.
Hey, Todd.
Over decades, I've noticed a dip, and it's anecdotal, but you could conduct research on it. In election years, there's so much anxiety because of the negativism, which is being just crammed down our minds, and more than ever in 2016, it affects consumer behavior. I've noticed this every election, presidential election year. I'm curious, where are, especially the boomers, if you can refine that, are posting their photos? What platform, Facebook, Instagram?
So when we asked them, because we just asked on platforms, for them it was higher on Facebook.
And how about when they actually book, what is the platform for paying?
For boomers?
For boomers.
Direct. They're more likely to book direct, airlines, hotels, they have loyalty.
How do they pay for it? Which platform? PayPal?
Well, if they're booking direct on an airline, it's whatever. Credit card, usually. They would use the, okay. If you're booking on a Hilton, it would be their website.
Great, thank you.
That's all right. I'll be quick. This is just a follow-up to the point you made about people would rather see fewer options. And it's more just kind of a public service announcement for everyone else here who does programming. And that's that I was listening to a TED Talk, and I wish I could remember who the researcher was. But the researcher made the point that when you have fewer options, you're actually happier with your choice later on when you reflect. And it's this kind of fear of missing out thing. Like, I'm already thinking about how much I regret missing biking because I'm going on the photography workshop this afternoon. So I know we talked earlier in the program about customization and giving people options, but I just wanted to put that tidbit out there for those of us to remember.
You talked about platforms not going to fee and social, but Facebook particularly has gone to fee. The organic newsfeed is over. And so when you have a page for your company or whatever, now every ad has to be paid and boosted. Do you have any data or thoughts on how Facebook users are responding to ads for things versus the organic following of especially tour companies or like that?
So the data we have is we just ask consumers kind of like what do they feel more influenced by or what do they connect with? They're more likely to connect with posts by their friends or family, but they are willing and will connect sometimes with brands, especially brands they like. And I think the bigger channel now for brands is the photo channels. That's where we see kind of like the growth rate on the ads, where they're feeling more influenced by ads that are photo driven than kind of like a big text post on a Facebook.
Good morning. Just wanted to know how you think educational travel is being affected by the internet, and where are we headed, 2015?
I mean, I think it's the effect is they would have on educational travel is that the travel pool is so large and that they have so much information that they know on travel. Sometimes it could be hard to find maybe an educational tour when the searches start on Google. And competing with Expedia, Priceline, and all those large online companies is difficult if they're going to go through online search. So there needs to be kind of a, maybe if everything's digital, there needs to be another connection. So if it's educational travel, and if you work in a school, there's the alumni, you have the emails. Personalizing those emails and those connections to try and make them, drive them to your website, because you're not going to win the Google Drive. Searching for a trip on Google will probably not come up to your website or your future, so it's got to be really driven by the personalization. That's where you can win, because no matter how much data people say Google has, their data is for billions and billions of people. Your data is for your customer and your student. And kind of the point I said where 18 to 24-year-olds are the most excited to travel, touch them now. If they're in school, that's when you can touch them. You can. They're not alumni yet. They don't know about a trip, or they probably don't have the money to take it, to be honest. But let them know it's there. Let them build that love for travel. They already love it. Just build that this is something that you can do and kind of like grow with or get it back in their mind. Don't let them kind of try and figure it out 20 years from now.
We have time for one more.
That slide of 2025 is scary, and it's not that far away, but I can easily see us all getting very, very lazy and saying, Alexa, give me the best educational travel trip you can find. And the AI is going to spin up something. It's going to pull it together. And because I'm lazy, I'm like, there I am. What can we do to be there? How can we compete with Alexas?
So I can't give a specific, because that's actually that same question the whole travel industry is kind of battling with, because this when we do our commerce, we have all the big kind of like travel companies coming in. So Expedia is thinking of that same question, as is Priceline, as is every travel tourism operator, because on voice, Alexa's not going to give them 5 to 6 options. It'll probably give them one. So whoever wins that battle really has an up-leg advantage. So that's kind of like something the whole industry is battling. I would kind of say is make them more or less the customer who's looking for you is probably someone who already knows you. Just make sure you're more prominent in that search so that they're not saying, give me the best educational travel tour, that they're using your name. Because your pool, the pool for educational travel tour is really, it's smaller. It's a smaller pool, but they also know who they want to talk to for it. So make sure they remember that. that's kind of like the only takeaway I could take to. But that question you asked, the whole travel industry is going to fight with until we know who wins, Google or Amazon, in that voice battle.
Can I ask a quick question, Mark? So this might be a step beyond your research, but do you find a difference by tier of travel? So if it's luxury versus mid-scale, because I think, you know, when I think about our travel, it's very high touch and people want someone who's accountable. So while they don't like to talk on the phone, they still want to know that there's somebody there. So do you find a difference by travel tier?
So by price point, a lot of things change. The strongest change is kind of the research timeline. So once the price point goes up, the research timeline grows, as well as decision time when they're booking earlier. So there's more likely to book direct, whether it be online or offline. So they're not going to go through a supplier. They want the person they're booking with, they want to manage their trip. That's kind of like the only data I have that could try and answer that. But as far as calling and touch points, they do want more service when they're booking higher priced items in that way.
What's interesting is I read some studies about how even like the traditional travel agent or travel planner model is coming back, and it's not necessarily by age. You would maybe assume that older travelers want that level of service, but it's actually even younger travelers because they just want someone who's more consultative. And I think that might vary by the type of travel, if it's more transactional versus, you know, a tour or something a little bit more complex or higher price point.
So actually, about younger travelers going to travel agents, that is something we've found a small percentage in our data, and then a lot of the rest of it is more for conversational, that those 18 to 24-year-olds, when they're more likely to book with a travel agent than older millennials, being that that's probably their first trip or their first international trip, so they don't know what they're doing. So they actually do go to travel agents and tour operators for that first trip. And then after that, our data shows they're probably going back to OTAs, but at least for that first trip, they're more than likely to go to a person. Travel apps have grown. We kind of tracked, I didn't put in the slides, but we do track kind of like the number of travel apps travelers have. They're having more on their phone. The problem we see is with travel apps, a lot of them are trip specific, that a traveler would then delete it after the trip. But they do like having them, especially after they did the booking. That's kind of like the only data I collect on it. So it's really, if you have it, definitely push it to them. And then after they do the bookings, well, they'll download it and keep it. But especially younger travelers, they're more likely to delete an app because they want to make space for new ones, whereas someone else, older travelers, were less likely to delete. And that's kind of like the only thing we kind of tracked.
I'm just going to make a plug to fill out your surveys. So when we're done, I didn't mean to cut off the questions, but I know people are starting to head out. So if you could just make sure you do that and hand that in, that'd be great. Anything else?